Welcome to IntelliCast. I am Brian Peterson. Thanks for tuning in. IntelliCast is brought to you by EMI Research Solutions. You can reach out to us at intellicast@emi-rs.com or at EMI_research or at IntelliCast1 on Twitter. Today, I am joined by another guest. Joining me today is Mary Draper. Mary, welcome back.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me back on the show.
Yeah. It has not been very long since you were last on here, so.
No, I'm kind of becoming a regular.
Yes, and I hope to continue that trend.
Yeah, me too.
So before we jump into today, just one note, we are winding down conference season, and as everyone is listening to this, IIEX is probably just about ready to start. So with that, Jason Inderhees and Tony Brown will be down in Austin at that conference. So if you are heading that way, be sure to connect with them. And as I mentioned, conferences, we are doing another conference recap episode, this time IA Annual. And Mary, you were down in Atlanta this past week.
I was down in Atlanta this past week. This was the first IA Annual event that I have had the pleasure of attending. It was a really great experience. I enjoyed it. It was different from other conferences that I have been to. And so for the listeners who aren't as familiar with me and my role here at EMI, I am the vice president of our partner network and quality. So oftentimes when I'm traveling for conferences, a lot of the networking and interactions that I have are more focused towards building our network, meeting with our vendors and our suppliers, talking to panels, learning more about recruitment processes and validation techniques and methods. And so again, primarily the conferences that I've attended have been the SampleCon or Quirks, very different. The AI Annual was a very different conference, I'd say, than what I have experienced at, Quirks and SampleCon. So it was, informational, refreshing, but very different, very different.
That's the feedback I've heard from others who have attended this one, that this is a very different, not necessarily style, but tone of conference compared to a lot of the other ones that go on, that it is not a lot of sales focus. It is very more educational, learning, and networking, right?
Definitely that. I'll say the tone even was set right at the kickoff of the conference. There was a session on day one. The title was literally, "So You Want to Sell to Me?" And it was a co-presentation with Karen Kraft from Johnsonville and Priscilla McKinney, a friend of EMI from Little Bird Marketing. Karen, who had a really great presentation, but spoke from the standpoint of a brand, of an end client. And that's kind of the highly coveted person when you're at a conference. Everyone wants to find that kind of needle in the haystack or the diamond in the rough, if you will. And it really was interesting. Again, like I said, it really set the tone kind of for me of the conference. She went through a few slides and just shared lightheartedly about the number of invitations that she received in the week or two leading up to the conference, how many coffee invites, how many dinner invites, how she showed a slide about how there was an increase in junk mail kind of leading up to the conference, and even went as far as to say how many minutes and hours she would have spent at the conference with people in meetings. I think it was something like, 13 or 14 hours of just meetings had she accepted all the invitations, and talked about some of the bad habits that sellers have when they are trying to approach clients or end clients or, their prospective clients. And then also some of the bad habits of those people who are sought after. She talked about how people turn their badges over and you kind of walk around head down. And so it did set the tone of this is an opportunity for us to enjoy the sessions, absorb the education, have some collaborations, but also please don't. I think there was even, I think they referenced the used car salesman approach. And so no one ever wants to be that used car salesman who's a, you know, who people avoid at all costs at a conference. But I will say, yeah, that definitely kind of set the tone for the next several days of let's talk, let's collaborate, let's learn something together. And took maybe a little bit off of the pressure to sell for, in my opinion.
Okay. Yeah. That is a interesting way to set the tone, but I can only imagine the number of emails she got. I would probably set the line at maybe 100.
Oh, no. And I took notes about it too, and I don't have them right here in front of me, but hundreds and hundreds of emails, and, you know, being, kind of like our tech guru and analyze a lot of our, spam and junk in the slide that showed, you can tell like the trend line of, oh, there must be a conference coming because all of a sudden her inbox has spiked with the invitation. So I thought that was interesting to share, but also kind of like, hey guys, we know you're here. We know you have a product to offer. We will come and look at your booth. We will listen to your presentation. Please let me breathe as I walk from a session, maybe to the restroom.
Give me that 2 minutes of peace.
Yeah. And so, but it set the tone, and kind of was the theme throughout. I think the rest of the conference was very much, let's use this opportunity to collaborate and learn. And so that was good. I appreciated that compared to maybe say a Quirks or a Sample Con where if you are a buyer, you don't really have much opportunity to kind of just absorb the information.
Right. But with that in mind, what were some of like the key themes or topics from the conference?
Key themes. There were several tracks. There were four tracks. Through the conference, focusing on research techniques, B2B research. We had focuses for artificial intelligence. That was one of the, you know, primary topics of conversation everywhere now. Data quality and also inclusive research. I'd say the one downside for me, and it's not a downside actually, but is that there was only one of me, so I couldn't be a part of all of the different tracks. There were often times where, you know, I'd look at the schedule and say, man, there are three really great sessions happening right now, and I can only physically go to one of them. So I am looking forward to them sending out the recap. I think all of the presentations, if you attended and, you know, paid to go to the conference, you will get the PowerPoint presentations from each of the sessions. So I'm looking forward to being able to dive into some of those sessions that I missed. I think one of the things that stood out to me about the conference and how we kind of are looking at things, even internally at EMI, artificial intelligence is a huge topic. That's what everybody's got questions. Everybody's got new techniques and methods that they're using. And so it felt good to know that we are on the right track and some of the things that we're exploring, and also comforting to know that a lot of people have a lot of the same questions or maybe even doubts. Different agencies are using artificial intelligence in different ways. One statement that stood out to me was that, you know, there seemed to kind of be a fear of the unknown. And I believe it might've even been Melanie Cartwright who said, artificial intelligence isn't going to end market research. It's not going to eliminate market research jobs. However, the people who are embracing artificial intelligence and using it are going to replace the research professionals that are not using it. And so that, you know, that was kind of one of those like, yeah, I think you're right. It's not going to take my job, but there are going to be people who are going to be better at, you know, maximizing efficiencies if they're using some of these tools. And now is the time to really dive in and learn and get on board with some of those methods and practices.
Yeah. So Gabby and Matthew were at Quirks a couple weeks ago, and they said as well, AI was a big, if not the biggest theme or topic there, but they also mentioned that the tone of the audience kind of changed from the previous years, where they both said, like, you know what, previous years, it was some hesitancy. You had the speakers that were all gung-ho about it, but there was hesitancy and a little fear from audience. And they had mentioned that this year there was much more acceptance from what they felt with the audience. Would you say that kind of was the same as well?
I think so. In the sessions where I attended that were AI focused, there was a divide, I think, if anything. There are the people who have been using some form of this for a long time, or have a team of people who are, you know, becoming experts in it, and they were able to answer questions and follow the presentation. They were all in. And then there's the curiosity, the, you know, more novice person who is still just trying to figure out what even are, you know, LLMs and what is generative AI. And so I think skepticism in market research is normal. It's healthy. You know, there was a time where, you know, I remember online research, no, we'll always do paper or pencil surveys. And then, you know, telephone will never go away. And how can you trust, you know, this data is coming from real, true, valid people, which we still do have those concerns. Yeah. But, you know, there was definitely a point in time when you would run across tab and you'd have a printout of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages, and it would take days and weeks to analyze. And now you can do that with some of these tools in minutes. And it really is freeing up the time of a researcher to be more creative, more consultative, spend less time on some of those manual tasks. And I think more people are understanding that and adopting those capabilities into their everyday workflow. So those that were skeptical are realizing, like, okay, here are some ways that this is really saving me a lot of time. In general, garbage in, garbage out. And I think if we just continue to reiterate those themes across end users and data processors and sampling companies and the qual space as well, we'll be able to kind of fine tune and find our path with generative AI.
Right. I mean, it even goes, that saying crap in, crap out goes with AI too. If you put garbage in, yes, it's just going to give you garbage out quicker.
Right. Right. So, no. Sorry. Go ahead. You had another question.
Was there a favorite session or sessions that you had? I know you said you couldn't attend them all. Is there a favorite one you had, and maybe one that gave you a little fear, like a little regret that you weren't able to attend?
That's good. So I'll name a couple, and I think I'll land on what I felt was my favorite. Day one, there was a session, Hurdles of Conducting High Quality Research and How to Get Through Them. That was Nolan Lowry from 8451. So shout out to another local Cincinnati market research organization. He highlighted the challenges of fraud with some of the online sample that you get, and the benefits that they have access to of, you know, behaviorally verified information rather than just self-reported data. And some of the trends that he found with self-reported data from panelists and how it related to some of the fraud activity that they tracked, shows skews in the data and brand awareness. And so that was a good session, but it also helped validate again some of the research on research that we're conducting. Yep. I think that kind of, I would encourage anyone who went to that session that really enjoyed it to download our sample landscape report, which I think, Brian, you can tell our listeners how to find that information. It just dropped.
I thank you for the plug for that, by the way.
Yeah.
Yes. You can go to our website, check out any of our social media channels. The link is there. It is emi-rs.com/the-sample-landscape. And you can download it for free there. And how they said, like, there are differences between self-reported versus the app, versus the behavioral data that they have. And we know 8451 works a lot with Kroger. And so it's almost creepy the amount of information they probably have on me because shop at Kroger all the time.
Yeah.
But we also know that the panelists giving the self-reported information isn't being it. They aren't trying to do it maliciously. Let's put it. It's not like, oh yeah, I did this activity for an hour. It's more of a human nature thing. I can say, oh, it took me about 20 minutes to do something. Well, it may have taken me only 13, but you round it up down. It's what a perception component to it.
Yep. Your recollection. I think one of the examples that he even gave was you can ask a person, how many times have you bought pre-sliced bread, like a loaf of bread, in the past 30 days? And I have no idea. If you ask me in a survey, my self-reported would probably be like, oh, in the past month, I might have bought two or three, but I think my Kroger loyalty card would tell you something different. I know there's been, you know, had family over and we've had Easter and, you know, there might've just been reasons why I had to buy more bread this week. And, you know, if you ask me and you compare it to my actual shopper data, it would be different. However, I would say with that session, there were a couple of others. There was a session that Maven Research did about accelerating B2B insights. There were other sessions about data quality, about reliable insights and how to do better market estimations. And a lot of these sessions, again, and not to keep plugging our sample landscape report, but definitely show that if you don't have high quality respondents in your data, then your brand awareness, your concept evaluations, your concept ratings, like all of these things are going to be very skewed if you have unsavory respondents in your data, maybe high frequency survey takers, undervalidated respondents. So it feels good leaving conferences like this and hearing common themes and knowing that what we're doing to champion quality in the industry is really on par with what the needs are of clients and users in the industry. One other session that I thought was really great was the Insights for All lessons from the Accessible Insights Consortium. This session was more about making sure that people with disabilities have better access to completing surveys. And really, they highlighted past just, you know, making sure the user experience is optimal for someone with disabilities. They called out that 1 in 4 adults in the U.S. has a disability. You know, and whether that be like vision or hearing or something with mobility or mental health disability. And what was pleasantly surprising, well, maybe not surprising, but when I think about being inclusive and making sure that our industry is accessible, I don't really think too much about from the perspective of the everyday market researcher. We send RFQs and RFPs to different suppliers, and sometimes those aren't even user-friendly, or right. We'll do a presentation and we're not considering the fact that maybe someone's colorblind and they may not see some of the things that we're putting in our presentations or how we're presenting to them.
Ours are colorblind friendly. Let's put it that way.
And I know that. Thank you, Brian, for championing that. But I can't think of how many times I've done a webinar or a client presentation and hadn't considered maybe the speed in which I'm talking or if closed captioning was available. And so I really did value their perspective on making sure that, again, we're making accessible surveys, not just for respondents, but an accessible industry, and making sure that we're thinking about it from vendors, clients, developers, programming platforms, the whole gamut. So I say all that and have not mentioned my favorite session. My favorite part of the entire conference were the breakout workshops. There were a couple of them happening simultaneously. So unfortunately, I didn't get to attend the one that was about developing an AI policy. However, I was a part of the developing a participant bill of rights workshop. You know, that's part of my passion. I'm on the Council for Data Integrity within the Insights Association, and thought that definitely was where I could make a bigger contribution. That session was very interactive. We had an icebreaker, played a little bit of Pictionary, and I won't tell you who self-proclaimed won Pictionary. You will know. He will probably post about it on social media. Friend and former colleague. But in the breakout sessions, where we're working on developing a participant bill of rights, we talked about screener recruitment to panels, maintaining databases, study and survey design, what respondents' rights are when they're participating in surveys, when it comes to incentives, how we'll think about conducting research with children, the respondents' rights when it comes to post-survey, you know, how are we communicating with them about what we're doing with their data? And so the flow of the session was great. Everybody kind of got a sheet of paper. We wrote down our ideas. We passed them around the room. There were some kind of whiteboarding exercises where we got to just feed off each other's energy. I think the statistic on the final day when they did a recap of those workshops were that the participant bill of rights came up with almost 400 some odd ideas of things that we can start to incorporate in the bill of rights. The AI policy had 700 or more ideas, points, you know, suggestions. And so I think that they will, I think the Insights Association has definitely been given a lot of feedback from some really brilliant minds in all of these sessions. That are actionable. And that's the key takeaway for me. Like, I felt this conference gave us information, let us collaborate in a way to where we can take action and keep moving the industry forward. I often complain about going to conferences where you have these, you know, kumbaya, sit around the fire moments. And then we talk about all these great things we would like to see change in our industry, mm-hmm. within our organizations. And then, you know, nothing happens and we come back a year later and we talk about it again. So I feel like there is good momentum. There is incredible collaboration happening. And so, that was my favorite experience was, you know, being able to really just kind of get my hands dirty with affecting some change.
Okay. I like when you're talking about the AI stuff, have they incorporated some of the new SMR document that SMR put out? I want to say a month ago, could be a little longer, because SMR did put out, it's almost like the SMR 38, but not quite. It's a different document, but it's giving like how you answer these questions about how you're using AI or incorporating AI into your research processes.
It is a different document. I think it's 22, is the SMR 22?
I think it's 22. Yeah.
I didn't actually hear a lot about that, but I do think that it's super helpful to have that kind of a document because you don't know what you don't know. And you don't know what questions to ask if AI is being used in a lot of different areas of the business. So I think that having a document like that helps people who don't know what they don't know, guide them to be thinking about some of the challenges. One part of the session that we talked about that was also very important was just understanding that the types of AI that you use that are open versus private, how to curate and craft or, you know, create your own persona or segment within the generative AI tools or the LLMs. A lot of people are putting very private, sensitive information into open platforms that's just available for everyone. It was good that they continued to reiterate, like, make sure that your data is protected, the information that you're, you know, exposing, you have actually permissions to even be using that data, and that you use it in a closed format so that it's not out there for the world to purge.
Right. And I know that's conversations we've had internally too about like, all right, how can we leverage this? Well, we need a certain type of one because if we put certain data in there, it's going to learn from it. And we don't want that. And then, so, right. Yep. Now that we talked about your favorite sessions and stuff at the conference, what was your favorite activity from that went on maybe outside of the conference core time?
I didn't get to spend a lot of time doing too much not conference related. So I'll say maybe two things. During day one, there was an eclipse happening. And I have had the eclipse on my calendar for months. I had it like, okay, at 3:10, I'm blocking out my calendar. So I was show as busy. And then about a week before the conference, I realized like, oh my gosh, I'm flying out on Sunday. The eclipse is on Monday. I'm going to miss it. And for the listeners, Cincinnati is where we are based out of. And we were in the path, I think, of totality or very close to totality, 90 something percent.
Yeah. So Cincinnati, the inside the 275 loop of Cincinnati did not have totality. It was we're up where I am, kind of southern part of Dayton through Dayton that had the totality, and farther, I think, up north all the way to Salina, pretty much. Because I know, like, even people in Lebanon, which is 15 minutes from my house, didn't have totality. So we're where I live is the like the last edge of totality, and it went up a couple hours north to like Salina.
So I was really looking forward to it. And so as I'm traveling down, I start to, you know, Google and figure out like what will the experience be in Atlanta. The day before, I kind of checked out of my hotel window, like, will I be able to see it from my room? Do I have to go outside? I looked at the session times to see what I might miss if I go outside at 3 o'clock to view. I did pack my eclipse glasses. I packed a couple of extra because I thought that there would be people interested in viewing the eclipse that would have forgotten to take their protective eyewear, which of course was the case. So oddly enough, in between sessions, there was a networking break at 2:30 that lasted until 3:15. So I used my networking break to go outside, found a street corner and looked up, and, you know, so me and, you know, 100 other strangers are staring up at the sky looking at the eclipse. And I did have some extra glasses. So it was kind of cool to stand out there, watch that, let people who weren't prepared use my glasses. And that drummed up some conversation. Atlanta is an area where there are always a lot of conferences going on. So there were multiple people with different badges from different hotels or different conference centers, you know, kind of staring up at the sky. And then we all kind of rushed back in to make sure that we could make it to the 3:30 session. So that was cool. Also, when I travel, I'm a foodie. I love to go to places to have a great meal. But when you are in a networking environment, you don't always get to just plan having a great meal around your own time. You know, you have to have lunches and dinners planned. So as I walked the exhibit hall, I stumbled upon an exhibitor, a booth that was hosted by Culture MRX. And as I was probing just more about what they do and kind of what their place is in the industry, I ran into JC Sebastian from Market Excel. He introduced me to Nicole Mitchell of Dynata. They told me about Culture MRX. It is a group of researchers who are collaborating, getting together at different conferences, and really trying to help move the industry forward, build awareness, and but it is focused towards African American market researchers. And so I've shared this previously on the podcast in another environment. Sometimes it's hard when you are a female or a minority in the industry, kind of finding your place, finding a seat at the table, if you will, where there are people who you can identify with. And so they then also introduced me to Sequoia Glenn from 924 Cooperative. They said, hey, we're going to dinner. If you don't have plans, come eat with us. And so that was it was a very nice, welcoming environment, great food that we had offsite, and it was nice to really connect with that group of people and just hear about all of the great things that they're doing outside of market research. You know, we have people who have full-time careers in the industry who are also volunteering for city council or are promoting our industry through educational events at colleges or HBCUs. So it was really nice to connect with them. And again, have a really great meal. I love a good Southern restaurant.
And that was so going to be my question. Where did you go?
Yeah. The name of the restaurant, I think it was, oh gosh, it escapes me, but it had a Gullah feel. And so that's a very, it's an ethnic type of food that originated in the South. I'll have to hashtag or share my open table review later, but I did, of course, you know, I always take an opportunity to find a place that's got good Southern biscuits. You know, one thing I didn't do, I did not make a public stop. Everyone should be shocked and appalled at my behavior for not stopping and getting my pub sub. I did not have an opportunity to do that, but, you know, felt a little less pressure knowing that there is now one drivable from my location in Cincinnati. So did not do my Publix fix, but did have really good food and fellowship and networking and interaction at some solid restaurants outside of the conference.
That's awesome. Yeah, I am surprised you didn't go to Publix, but also a little bit probably didn't have that time. But as you said, there's some coming to Northern Kentucky now, which is a lot more drivable than what you used to do for Thanksgiving.
It is far more convenient. At one point, even, and I'll reference back to the 8451 presentation, I sat there and I have to admit, like for a couple of minutes, I tuned out of the presentation because I'm like, I wonder what's the company that does that for Publix and how can EMI get involved in helping them with their research? And, you know, diverted my attention back to the sessions.
All right. Well, I have one more question. So this has come up on the podcast several times over the years, and it's about conference locations. So we seem to see a lot of New York, Chicago, LA, but then there are some odd locations. Like we've had where SampleCon was, which was almost a resort type lake place in the middle of nowhere in Georgia. We've had Charleston, South Carolina. We've had some other, like, maybe not the most easiest ones to get around to or navigate. And Atlanta came up. I know there's been some in the past, like TMRE has been there before and MRMW has been to Atlanta before. I think IIEX used to be in Atlanta. But do you feel like, how did you feel with Atlanta being where the host city of this conference? Like, should the industry itself have more in that area?
I think it's a good place for conferences. There are plenty of hotels, a lot of convention space, conference space, great, you know, after hour offerings, restaurants and bars, and there are sporting events. So there's a lot to do there. I think one of the benefits of Atlanta is that it's easy for people to get to. Especially if you're on the East Coast, it's, you know, 2 hour max flight. You can get there from Dallas. Cincinnati was an hour and a half flight, New York, 2 hour flight. So I think having it be in an area where it's easy to get to and, plenty of Ubers, you know, I never had to wait more than 5 minutes for an Uber to pick me up, compared to, you know, when I went to a conference that was hosted in Pasadena, California, getting an Uber was almost impossible. And then, you know, the cost and the time it took to travel from the venue to the hotel, to the airport was, you know, over an hour. So I don't love when I have to maximize my time, spending so much time trying to navigate just getting from the airport to the venue. So I think Atlanta was a really good place. I do want to see more conferences expand to other major cities. I think there's a lot of research happening in the good old Midwest. And whenever I travel to these events, I always wonder, why is there no major conference that happens in Cincinnati? I think when you think about the Midwest, there are events that are hosted in Chicago. But, you know, Cincinnati is the birthplace of market research. We've got Burke, we've got P&G, we've got Direction. There are so many huge research firms. Also, our nightlife and our hotel space, our convention space is comparable to what we've seen in other major cities. So while I will you know, give the praises to Atlanta. I think that's a good location. I do wonder why we don't ever have anything in Cincinnati, and any of the conference coordinators that happen to listen to our podcast, please think about Cincinnati. I think our team would even be happy to make some suggestions or recommendations. It is a decent airport, easy to get to. I think maybe the difference might be the weather. You want to come to Cincinnati in the spring. People don't really love traveling to, you know, northern cities and in the winter months. But yeah, I think Atlanta was a good place. I don't know if it's somewhere I want to go every single year for the same conference, but I do encourage people to think outside of your typical Chicago, New York, Atlanta. Austin seems to be a more popular place for conferences now as well. But there just simply are going to be some people who don't have huge travel budgets and aren't going to be able to make it to all of these exotic places like Pasadena or kind of the middle of nowhere, Georgia, we referred to one of the conferences. So yeah, I'd love to see something happen in Cincinnati.
I would too. I mean, we both live here. There's lots of stuff to do, lots of hotels, easy access to airports, Ubers, all of that, which is key when you're having a conference. That's why I was asking about Atlanta, because we know the Atlanta airport's one of your top four or five biggest airports in the country. Mm-hmm. I mean, half the time when I'm flying somewhere, I'm connecting out of Atlanta. So getting there is never an issue. I think that's the only drawback for Austin. I mean, great hotels, great stuff to do. Getting there, the airport, there's not that many direct flights. You have to connect through somewhere. And if there's a drawback to having it in Austin, that would be it.
Yeah.
I say that having gotten stuck in Dallas last year overnight.
Yeah. You don't, that was one fear. That's probably where I'll close. Leaving from Atlanta, there was bad weather and my flight was supposed to be 5:30. It didn't end up taking off until closer to 6:30, but because of the weather and the turbulence, it was probably the most roller coaster-esque flight that I had been on. But you know, you just keep checking that delay board and hoping that your flight doesn't get canceled, because the last thing you want to do is get stuck at a conference knowing that, you know, work starts picking up first thing in the morning the next day. So fortunately, I got home with no trouble. I knew some people who drove and probably beat me home driving from Atlanta to Cincinnati with the time it took to get to the airport and catch the flight. But all in all, a very good experience. I would absolutely be interested in attending the IA annual, wherever that may happen next year, and looking forward to continuing to get involved in some of those workshops and brainstorming sessions and the consortiums that they talked about. It really gave me exposure to other groups and entities that are collaborating in the industry. And so a lot to follow up on for me, but overall a really good experience.
That's great. Mary, thank you for joining me today and giving such a thorough recap of the IA annual conference.
Thank you for having me. I know I was very long-winded, but for anybody that wasn't able to attend, I do have a lot of notes about a lot of sessions. Happy to, you know, follow up with phone calls or, you know, have a little local check-in, happy hour, whatever it may be, to share some additional insights from the conference.
Awesome. Well, thanks everybody, and hope that we'll be back in about a week.
Thanks.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.